CGM 99.1 FM programming is hosted almost exclusively by community volunteers. The views and opinions expressed on the following program are that of the host and their guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of CGM FM. For more information and resources, visit our website at cjam.ca.
Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CGM's Handy Link. You're listening to HandyLink on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA Windsor on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, Corey McDonald will be telling us about CRF. So what can you tell me about CRF?
Well, the CRF grew out of an email-based support group for people with choroideremia, or as we call it, CHM, which is a very rare inherited retinal degenerative disease. And back in about 1996, a young man with CHM started an email-based support group, you know, before there was social media. And several of us over the years found this support group, and we just, you know, we traded emails, just sharing our lives and trying to help each other, you know, live with this eye disease. And one day there was a thread where people were, you know, kind of bemoaning the fact that because we are so rare, that there was no money going into research and no research being conducted for our eye disease. You were diagnosed with CHM, you were told you were going blind, and have a good day.
So
a few of us that are affected by this disease decided to join together and start the Choroideremia Research Foundation, or CRF, and start raising money and awareness to help us find a treatment or a cure. And that was in 2000 when we formed. So in 23 years, we've gone from zero research to, oh gosh, we funded over $5 million worth of research at this point. And we have had three different gene therapy clinical trials to stop the progress. And also, we're working on funding other avenues, potential drug therapies, stem cell-based replacement therapies, that type of stuff. So the work is ongoing, but we've come a pretty far way in a relatively short time.
So in modern times, how do you reach out to those affected with this condition?
Several avenues. I mentioned social media. We have a support network on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter and WhatsApp. And we also have our website, curechm.org. And so pretty much if someone has been diagnosed with choroideremia, if they hop on the internet and search for choroideremia, they're going to find our footprint is pretty large. In addition to that, we also host informational booths at various type of vision professional conferences, such as the American Academy of Ophthalmology, the American Academy of Optometry, the American Society of Retinal Specialists, and there's a litany of them. And at these booths, we hand out materials and we talk to vision professionals about choroideremia, the fact that it's misdiagnosed quite often as a different disease called retinitis pigmentosa, and we actually have information for them to help them with their diagnosis of choroideremia.
So, when you say it's a rare condition, do you know offhand about how many people are affected?
Yeah, it affects, in the United States, it affects about 1 in 50,000. So there's approximately 7,000 affected males here in the United States, which doesn't count the female carriers, who are also affected to varying degrees.
So, in your time with the foundation, has there been any success story that stands out for you?
Yeah, I can share a personal one. I was a participant in a phase 3 clinical trial for gene therapy. And that was 5 years ago, and as of when I went for my last appointment at the end of April, my treated eye is still stable after 5 years. So far, so good.
It's amazing. So, do you have any advice for anyone out there who might be just starting off a journey with this condition? You mentioned a lot of the early myths of how it was that there wasn't a lot of hope or people just being told there's nothing you can do. But do you have any advice for anyone who might be just asking the question, is this really the situation?
Yeah, you know, the first thing I would tell them is to find us. We have a ton of information on our website with resources and tips and advice on living with choroideremia. Our support groups we're represented in about 15 different countries in our support groups. So from all over the world, you can get advice and you can get information from people who are walking the same path that you are walking. And, you know, with a rare condition, it's very tough to relate to people who don't have it, and people who don't have it have a difficulty relating to us. So it's very special when you can, you know, get together with people, even virtually, that get it. There's no feeling like that to have somebody else say, I know exactly what you're going through, and here's what I've done to help me. So that, to me, would be the first thing I would tell them, and I would tell them there is hope. There truly is hope. I'm pushing 60, so it may not happen in my lifetime, but I feel very confident that someone who was born with CHM today will never have to go blind.
It's amazing. What are the next steps for the foundation?
Well, we keep pushing forward, raising money, raising awareness, and, you know, our ultimate goal is to go out of business. We don't want there to be a need to raise money for research, because we want the cure. We want a treatment. We want to have our sight back. And when we accomplish that goal, then we can, you know, shut our doors. But that is the ultimate goal.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure. Thanks. Thank you.
Now, this next interview is a post-dated one, so some of the events referred to may already have happened. In this segment of our show, Andrea Van Hook will be telling us a little bit about RESNA. So what can you tell me about RESNA?
RESNA is as an organization, first of all, it stands for Rehabilitation Engineering and Assistive Technology Society of North America, which is a mouthful, so we like to call ourselves RESNA, and we are a professional, we are a professional membership organization for professionals that work in assistive technology, so rehabilitation engineers, occupational therapists, physical therapists, speech language pathologists, audiologists, anyone who works with clients with disabilities to help them with their assistive technology needs can be a RESNA member. And that's what we do and who we are. We offer continuing education programs for folks who work in assistive technology. We print a scientific journal. We do an annual conference. We have a certification for assistive technology professionals so that they can let their clients know that they have achieved a competence level in assistive technology. We also work with standard setting organization to set standards for wheelchairs, wheelchair seat cushions, tie downs, cognitive technologies, and a whole gamut of different types of technologies.
So, how do you reach out to interested parties to let them know that RESNA membership might be advantageous for them?
Well, we do that in a number of ways. We have our website, and if you Google assistive technology RESNA, should pop up. We also have a free weekly newsletter called RESNA News Briefs that includes RESNA news, but also news from around the world on assistive technology products and information that people can sign up for on the website. We do presentations at other conferences. For example, we just finished a RESNA track at the International Seating Symposium in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, where we offered 6 courses to conference attendees. So we reach out through a variety of ways.
So are there any challenges in ensuring that professionals are kept up to date on the latest and greatest piece of assistive technology? I mean, what was true 5 years ago might not necessarily be the standard today.
There are always a lot of challenges to keep up with technology because technology changes every day. It is a constant learning process for folks that work in the field. And essentially, you can keep up through RESNA. There's also some trade papers like Mobility Management and HME News. I set Google Alerts myself to keep abreast of things. RESNA News Briefs publishes a lot of information about what's happening around the world in assistive technology, but it is a constant work. It's constant work to keep up with what's going on.
So I'd imagine with all the advancements, persons with disabilities are consulted about what's practical and what actually works as far as this technology. I mean, it's fine to have something and assume it'll work, but
that's correct. With our certification program, the assistive technology professional is trained in working with clients with disabilities to assess their needs and show assistive technology solutions that could meet their needs, experiment with them. It's a lot of conversation, a lot of back and forth to find what works for each individual person.
So in your time with RESNA, has there been any success moment that stands out for you?
Overall, there's been a lot of improvement in access to technology. I think our biggest success moment just happened this year here in the States. The Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services is now going to cover seat elevation in wheelchairs, seat elevation technology in wheelchairs. that's been a long policy fight for about 12 years. ResNA published its first position paper on the importance of seat elevation in 2010. So to have that finally happen where power wheelchairs will have funding to be able to have seat elevation technology for those people that need it, that is a big win. Comes to mind most, the most recent big win.
So if you could send any message to the community about the need to keep pushing forward with adaptive and assistive technologies to be there for individuals with disabilities, what would you say?
First of all, if I would say to people with disabilities to find out if your if the person helping you is a is ResNA ATP certified, and what that means is that they have gone through a training process. They've been tested with an exam that they are competent in assistive technology service delivery and provision. So that's the number one thing, is to ask, are you ResNA ATP certified? The other thing that that gives the consumer is that if there are any issues with your service provider, they are bound through the certification program to follow a code of conduct and standards of practice. So they are, you know, they need to follow ethics, have professional ethics and standards of practice, evidence-based research for assistive technology. And if there's a problem, consumers can file a complaint with ResNA. And ResNA will investigate. So that's an important thing I'd like to get out to the consumer community, is that that is available for them. Other than that, I would say if you are interested in a career in assistive technology and adaptive technology and helping people and have a technology mindset, to check out our website at resna.org. We have, our courses are open to non-members as well as members, so you can check us out for a while. You can subscribe to ResNA News Briefs and see if you'd like to pursue a career, in assistive technology.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
If you could save a life one day, would you? In Ontario, there are over 1,600 people waiting for a life-saving organ transplant right now. Every 3 days, one of these people will die while waiting. By taking just 2 minutes to register as an organ donor, you can save up to 8 lives and transform 75 more through tissue donation. What you decide to do today has the power to make a lasting impact. Join millions of other registered organ donors in Ontario and give hope to those waiting. Register at beadonor.ca.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA Windsor on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, Andrea Van Hook told us a little bit about ResNA, and Corey McDonald told us about CRF. In this segment of our show, Dr. Christopher Still will be telling us about obesity. So, can you tell me a little bit about your work in obesity treatments?
Yeah, so I'm an internist by training, internal medicine doctor by training, and I did a fellowship in obesity medicine and nutrition support some 25 years ago. So now I mainly deal with patients with obesity and their medical problems that come along with the disease of obesity.
So, in that sense, do you ever encounter any myths or stereotypes concerning the risks of obesity?
The biggest risk is the stigma that it's a willpower change, you know, or if they would just eat less and exercise more, that they it's a personal choice. And that really is farthest from the truth. We've known and getting more and more information that obesity is truly a disease of inflammation and really the biology of weight loss and weight regain. And so I think that's the biggest myth, that it's a personal choice and that patients are, you know, lack of intelligence or lazy. The stigma of obesity is very real, very real. And I think that came out very loudly, you know, during the COVID year. So I think that's one of the biggest misconceptions or stigma regarding the disease of obesity.
So do you find that because of that stigma, there's an increased risk of related mental health conditions such as depression or anxiety, especially in social settings, I'd imagine?
Yeah, that's a good point. We know that as our body mass index goes up, so does the rate of non-suicidal depression and anxiety, just like that you said. And a lot of it, you know, they don't want to go out. You know, they've been stigmatized by, number one, their families, the number one biggest, and number two, unfortunately, are physicians. And so, you know, that is the most common mental health issue, I think, affecting patients with obesity is indeed depression and anxiety.
So are there any steps in general a person can take if they're worried about this condition getting more serious for them?
Yeah, I think the main thing is to getting a healthcare professional that they feel comfortable with. And if they haven't been able to feel comfortable or talk openly about their weight and their medical problems, then, you know, there are plenty of other providers and many more obesity medicine specialists all over the country. So I definitely would definitely recommend, you know, patients, if they're not happy, to seek another provider. You know, it's hard because a lot of times they've been with their provider for years and, you know, they're not getting what they need to, but they don't want to make them angry or, you know, go to somebody else. But really, now is the time, because there's many safe and effective treatment options for patients with obesity, and most importantly, their medical problems. And so, you know, I think that they need to find someone that they're comfortable with. A lot of patients don't go back to healthcare providers because they've been stigmatized and, you know, they've been made fun of. And so there are plenty of other providers out there.
So I'd imagine it's important to go to a reputable source. I mean, you hear all these things about fad diets, lose 20 pounds in 5 minutes, that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, they always go to Dr. Google and, you know, on the internet of what's popular. But really, those are just fad diets. You know, patients with obesity and their medical problems, this is a chronic relapsing disease. And so you really want to find someone that, you know, that treats obesity and its medical problems. Like I said, there's many more obesity medicine specialists out there. And if you haven't found the right person, you know, don't waste your money on the fad diets, because, you know, weight management is a lifelong journey. And if something says it's on that, you know, it'll work in, you know, 30 days for $300, you know, save your money, because they're just prying on these patients that are just really vulnerable to try anything.
So do you see society taking any steps in the right direction as far as treatment goes?
Yes, so this is a great time to be in my business and cardiometabolic medicine, really, in obesity, diabetes. There's been, just in the last few years, a new class of medications that have really been shown to be, number one, very effective, but also safe for a variety of cardiometabolic problems. So diabetes, you know, fatty liver disease, weight management in and of itself. So there are definitely changes coming that are here and are coming in the future with regards to treating one's obesity and other comorbid medical problems.
So what are the next steps in your own work?
Really, it is to work on getting access to these medications. Like I said, you know, like 90% of patients that have diabetes are on a medication. less than 2% of patients with obesity are on an anti-obesity medication for a variety of reasons. But we have a great opportunity now with these newer medications to really open up the information highway and start to talk to employers about reimbursement for these medications, because in the long run, they'll save money for their employers, because they do cause and help with a significant amount of weight loss. So I think just getting education on that they're safe and effective treatment, it's got to be long term, but the weight loss efficacy and benefit on all the other medical problems are significant.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
Now, my friends, as promised, here's one more interview from the recent ICHA Fishing Derby. This one, again, was done on location, featured two gentlemen who were there to help out filming the event. This is Cam Wells here with
Walter Riggi
and
Luca Riggi.
They'll be telling us a little bit about helping out here at the ICHA Fishing Derby. So what brings you out here today?
We were brought on to film the event and make a video for Pat so he can use it on next year's promotional activities.
Oh, very nice. First time doing this?
It's my third, and Luca, second time for me.
And what have some of the high points been? What have you seen out here that stands out for you?
I'd have to say what stands out for me here is the speeches, you know, because it really gives out a lot of information, and it's appreciated towards everyone who decided to take the time out of the day to come out here.
So, what about the participants? You've seen a lot of joy and just a lot of fun among them?
Yeah, I've seen so. A lot of people are excited to be fishing and enjoying the beautiful day. Great atmosphere. The organizers are fantastic. So food stations are going to be nice too. So everybody's really excited. They're hovering around all different stations absorbing things.
So do you see yourselves coming back and maybe being a part of it in the future?
I'm sure if they want us back, why not? We like to be outside in the sun. It's beautiful. It's peaceful, relaxing. It's nice.
So what do you think events like this are important for the community?
It's another way of bringing people together. This generation, this society is getting used to being indoors all the time, and that's not healthy. Right? We need sunlight, we need vitamin D, we need interaction with people. Being online all the time, it's okay, but just be one-on-one with somebody, it's a lot better because it's got that human interaction.
Especially for these participants with disabilities, for some this might be really the only opportunity they get to just be out there and do something else.
Yeah, I agree with you, Cam. To be together with other people that may have the same disabilities or the same abilities, it's good, it's healthy, and we all feed from each other because we're human beings and society is extremely important.
Isolation tends to breed loneliness, which breeds depression and so on and so forth.
Isolation is desperation.
Thank you very much for taking the time.
Thank you, Cam.
Thank you.
Always find it interesting, my friends. There's still a stigma around things like mental health concerns or eating disorders, things of that nature. How can we have compassion for someone with something like paralysis, then turn around and look at someone who says, I have a disability as well, and disregard that? The consequences are just as serious. They affect overall quality of life, and it is not something within the person's control. I call upon each one of us keep an open mind and an open heart. The fact is, you can't just look at the obvious and the surface level stuff and say, I know this person's story. I know what they've been through. I know why it is they do what they do and why it is they are the way they are. Fact is, a disability is a vitally important ingredient in a person's life, but it is not the sole ingredient. Is never the totality of who they are. Yes, it may be an important facet of who they are, may shape certain other elements, but aside from that, most important of all, they are a person worthy of dignity, respect, and love. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.